outside. And all them crazy murderers will never run from inside. You try to keep me down cause you see not joy. All them knows them from, so you call a man a boy. You not I can just see, open up your eyes.
The thing that makes Judaism dangerous to everybody, to every race, to every nation, to every idea, is that we smash things that aren't true. We don't believe in the boundaries of nation state. We don't believe in the ideas of these individual gods that protect individual groups of people. These are all artificial constructions, and Judaism really teaches us how to see that. In a sense, our detractors have us right in that we are a corrosive force. We're breaking down the false gods of all nations and all people because they're not real.
And here we go, folks. It is Sunday, December the 27th, 2020, and you are listening to today's edition of the Ugly Truth Broadcast. Welcome to the program, folks, and a very Merry Christmas to all of you out there, Christians and Muslims. And peace on earth to men of goodwill. And I say that, folks, because I only relatively recently came in contact. You know, growing up, we always heard at Christmas time, we heard peace and goodwill to all men. But the actual saying is peace, according to the story in the gospel, peace on earth to men of goodwill. You see, so clearly here, you know, the angel of the Lord speaking to the shepherds, and telling them to go and to see the baby Jesus born in Bethlehem. It says the original writing is peace on earth and to men of goodwill, meaning, you know, let peace fall upon those who are doers of good. And even though it doesn't say let the evil be damned, of course that is implicit in that statement. And I think that's a very important thing that gets overlooked these days, is that we're not supposed to wish well upon evildoers, other than to have them be rehabilitated and transformed and turned into good people, which anyone can do, folks. They can do that if they simply make the choice. But to sit back and to bless people while they are engaged in evil behavior, it's not a good thing. It's not a good thing for society. It's not a good thing for the evildoers. Evildoers need to be confronted with their evil, with curses and not with blessings, because to bless them in their evil deeds means that they are going to continue doing it. And I think that this is one of the lessons that that really needs to be learned as far as the entire experiment in human civilization goes, is that we can't sit around and wait for, you know, some supernatural deity, whatever we want to call this deity, to fix things for us. You know, we're basically down here on our own, left at the mercy of these evildoers, and the only way that these evildoers are going to be contained and constrained is with our good works. And on that note, folks, I want to send out a hearty word of thanks to the good works that some of the listeners have done in terms of very kind words of encouragement and a few dollars that have been sent our way so that we can continue doing this. It's greatly appreciated, and especially now, folks, when I know that everybody out there is feeling the pinch. Either their wallets are lighter or else they are consumed with worry, as they should be, over whether or not there's going to be a functioning economy in the near future. And so those people who have chosen to part with their pennies in order to help us out with what we do here, we greatly, greatly appreciate that. Let's see, my plans are, folks, at this particular time, my plans are that come January the 1st, which is less than a week from now, that I will be doing two programs a week. Those are my plans. Of course, as I have said now for the last month or so since we've been doing the program, those plans, of course, are contingent upon facts on the ground. And if what I think is headed our way, if I'm only 50% right of it, those facts on the ground could very well prevent and preclude us doing any programs whatsoever. And we'll be talking about that in a bit. But that is the plan, is to go forward with 2 days a week. And we'll just see how it goes. But in the meantime, again, I would like to thank the, for whatever reason, folks, last weekend's program, like the one before it, it struck a chord with people. They were really affected by it. And I got quite a bit of commentary on that in that regard. And so I think that's a good sign, folks. I think there's a lot to think about and talk about that unfortunately is not being thought about or talked about. You know, I spend my days beginning very early in the morning reading the news. And I'll be honest, folks, I don't read anything in the alternative media anymore because it has just become a clearinghouse of crazy, kooky, and really, I would say, irrelevant chirping. That's a word that Mike Piper used to use quite a bit whenever he wanted to describe the noise pollution that comes out of the mouths of people who really have no business rendering commentary on anything. They're completely incompetent. They are completely, they're totally out of their league. And so I don't read anything that really comes across, comes my way from the alternative media. Unfortunately, you know, I'm still on a few individuals, their big mailing lists that they send out stuff. And you can tell if what I get is a good sampling of what's going on out there, then it's obvious just how turned around people are and not focusing on what needs to be focused on these days. And you know, I say that with a great deal of regret, folks. I wish it weren't like that because, you know, we had, well, we're coming up on 20 years since 9/11, and you know, there were a lot of missed opportunities for us, a lot of missed opportunities, and we talked about this, and I'm going to apologize ahead of time, folks, because if the last program or the programs before seemed kind of disjointed, today's probably going to be worse in that regard because I'm feeling a little under the weather. I woke up this morning late, actually, for me. Sleeping late means sleeping past 4:30, so I woke up late, and just my whole body felt like I had been run over by a steamroller, and so I'm fighting a bit of a headache right now. I don't know what it is. Maybe it is COVID. I don't know. Maybe it's just a regular old cold, folks. But anyway, so if I seem a little bit disjointed today, or if I have on previous programs, and you can, we can just blame it on the bug, whatever that bug happens to be. Anyway, a lot of missed opportunities, and this was one of the things that, you know, there was a news story that I posted on the program this week, and it dealt with the fact that Alex Jones, who did feature at least shortly on last weekend's program, and I was talking about, you know, the missed opportunities that we had in letting Jones get away with putting forward this Sandy Hook hoax nonsense and the incredible opportunities that were lost, that were wasted as a result of that. Because, as we all know, Jones is now the target of many, many multi-million dollar lawsuits that have been brought against him by the family members, and I think even in one case, an FBI agent. I don't know how he got dragged into this, but many lawsuits, many multi-million dollar lawsuits that have been brought against Jones because he was, at least in terms of his audience numbers, he was the loudest bullhorn in propagating this nonsense that no shooting took place and that no one died at Sandy Hook. And what a lost opportunity that was for all of us, including those of us such as yours truly and our greatly missed friend Mike Piper, who fought this thing tooth and nail from the very beginning, warning about what would happen, not might or may or could or anything, but what would happen as a result of this. Number one, the fact that we would be dragged down into this cesspool of being discredited, that we would be painted as kooks, and that the entire 9/11 truth narrative, the revisionism that we were all attempting to bring about in the aftermath of 9/11, that what would happen is that whatever questions may have been out there in the minds of a lot of Americans, and there were a lot of Americans who had not just questions about the official narrative of 9/11, but doubts, okay? But, you know, we have to remember that these are people who, you know, they're only going to go swimming in very shallow waters. They're not going to take a deep dive into waters that are deep and dark and murky, and you can't see the bottom of it. You don't know what's in there, okay? These are not people who, are willing to jump into really crazy conspiracy theories. They have to be brought along very, very slowly, okay? Well, you know, as we discussed many years ago, folks, you know, what would happen, this is what has happened. And interestingly enough, this week there was a story, I believe it was on the Daily Beast, and, you know, I hate using sources such as that, folks. I hate using the Daily Beast, owned by Jane Harman, the Israeli spy who sat in Congress for many years. I hate having to use Israeli news sources, but if you're going to establish a certain argument, you're going to have to start off with bona fides. And if your objective in this argument is to paint a particular group of people, I mean, like any court case, folks, the most damning evidence that you can bring against the accused are their own words, okay? If somebody's on trial for murder, then clearly if evidence is uncovered, you know, them writing on their diary or them sending an email or a Facebook post and it says, you know, I really wish my husband was dead or whatever, that's the most damning evidence that you can bring against somebody because it's their own words. And likewise, with the stories that I put up on the website, the fact is that I take most of them from either the Israeli press or the Jewish-owned, Jewish-dominated mainstream media in America. But anyway, there was a story appearing on the Daily Beast this week about how General Michael Flynn, Trump's original national security advisor who had been run through the legal meat grinder here in an attempt to bring Trump down, how he was at a pro-Trump rally, I believe it was in Washington, D.C., and Alex Jones with his big fat bullhorn making noise and you know, engaging in all of the theatrics that are famously now part of Jones's repertoire. He went up to introduce himself and to talk to General Flynn, and General Flynn wouldn't touch him with a 10-foot pole. Now, remember, folks, Flynn and Trump, President Trump, you know, they have been dabbling in conspiracy theories now for about 4 years, at least 4 years, okay? You know, they have pushed the envelope out there much, much farther than any president really has in a long time. The last time we heard the word conspiracy was when Hillary Clinton was talking about this vast right-wing conspiracy that was out to get her husband. And she was correct in that. You know, you have to give the devil its due. There was a vast, quote-unquote, right-wing conspiracy. Actually, it wasn't the right-wing conspiracy that we're thinking about here in terms of right-wing being Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and of course, Ken Starr and all of the rest of them, but rather the right wing being run out of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu and his Likud party. Okay. And then, of course, George W. Bush, the little monkey in the White House, he didn't say the word conspiracy, but he did say they, quote unquote, hate us for our freedom in trying to explain why 19 Arab hijackers, I'm making fun of those people who refer to Arabs as Arabs in the same way that they refer to Italians as Italians. These 19 Arabs flew these planes into these buildings, and the only explanation that was needed was, let's see, one, they hate us for our freedom. Seven words. Okay. So anyway, nevertheless, Trump and Flynn, you know, they have been pushing the envelope, the boundaries, the borders, okay, out there much, much further in terms of conspiracy theories, which they have been willing to discuss publicly. So my point is, going back to what we discussed last week with what if, you know, what if Alex Jones, what if he had not gone down this road of peddling this nonsense that no one died at Sandy Hook and a few other crazy cookies that Alex handed out to his listening audience to munch on. You know, it's entirely possible that Alex would have gone up to General Flynn, and General Flynn would have said, "Hey, you know, you're doing a great job. It's great to meet you. I'd love to be on your program sometime." But he can't now, you see, because Alex Jones, and by extension, the entire quote-unquote 9/11 truth movement, okay, it is the proverbial tar baby. Okay, nobody wants to touch that, okay, because you're going to get it all over you. So, again, folks, that just goes back to the discussion, the topic of last week's discussion, what if. And this is going to be a continued topic of discussion here because our lives are governed by it every minute of every day. Every minute of every day. And on that note, folks, as promised, you know, we are going to revisit the theme that is used in the soundbite just prior to the music that comes on for the program. And for those out there who are new listeners, that was the voice of Douglas Rushkoff. He is a very, very Jewish writer and commentator. And I believe he was at some conference someplace where he was speaking. I don't know. And, you know, he says it very plainly, and I invite you, I encourage you, I entreat to you to go back and to listen to that very carefully, okay, because the parameters of your life, whether you live in New York, whether you live in Florida, whether you live in New Delhi, okay, the capital of India, the parameters of your life are governed within that 60-second soundbite, okay? Whether you realize it or not, okay, this is how dangerous this corrosive force that Rushkoff is talking about. This is how dangerous it is. It's like radiation poisoning, okay, that once it gets into the air or into the water, it's there, and it's there for thousands, sometimes even millions of years, just constantly sickening and mutating life around it. Okay. And, you know, we point this out, folks, especially now in the midst of all of the political, social, and economic turmoil, which really is just getting started. That encompasses our lives right now. And it is because of this corrosive force, folks. Make no mistake about it. This virus is the result of what I am sure was a deliberately concocted, cooked up, contrived virus, something out of a chemical weapons lab, probably in Israel. You know, I posted a story this week dealing with coronavirus and the fact that it is now mutating to the point where, as they say, that it is now almost twice as easy to catch, twice as infectious as it was a year ago. And I made the point, and of course, you know, I don't have a degree in virology or anything like that, folks, but I speculated in some of the commentary that appeared on that story that for a virus to mutate that quickly, as they're saying, to become almost twice as infectious means that either it is not the same virus, but rather a variant. You know, I mean, it's like I liken it to a cat, folks. You know, cats are born as these tiny little kittens, and, you know, they really can't hurt you, okay? But as they get older, they get bigger, Their teeth get sharper and longer. Their claws get sharper and longer. Okay, and especially in the case of like a lion or a tiger or something like that. Okay, it starts off small and relatively harmless, but then once it reaches maturity, obviously, this is not a cute little kitty cat anymore. And I see this virus progressing along the same lines. If it is mutating, as the news reports say that it is, then, you know, why now? The Chinese have been around for thousands of years. The reasons that we have been given as to the origins of this virus, that it began in a wet market, okay, where they sell live animals and things like that, well, that's been going on for a long time, too. Long time. So it just so happens that this virus makes its appearance right at the very moment the president finds himself, a very unpopular president with the powers that be, who first tried to prevent his nomination to the Republican ticket and then tried to deny him winning the election, and who have been absolutely relentless as a corrosive force in trying to dissolve his presidency. And yet this virus now just so happens to pop up right at the tail end of this impeachment business that was prosecuted against him by two Jews in the Congress with Israeli citizenship. And so so this corrosive force, ladies and gentlemen, this corrosive force mentioned by Rushkoff, you know, this is one of those what-if things. You see, what if 2,000 years ago, when humanity faced this fork in the road, and I'm talking, of course, about the creation of the religious, philosophical, you know, this new thing known as Christianity, what if at that moment, rather than incorporating what was the nuclear reactor of Judaism and what has been from the very beginning the nuclear reactor of Judaism, meaning the Torah or the Old Testament or anything like or all of that, what if instead of that, what if instead they had just begun the whole thing with Jesus Christ? Now, I think that this is a very, very valid what-if discussion to have, and not for religious reasons, folks, but for geopolitical reasons that we're dealing with right now, because it is this corrosive force that manufactured this virus, that let this virus loose from China, knowing the damage that it was going to do, and specifically aimed at the person and the presidency of Donald J. Trump. Now, of course, this is going to fly in the face of the quote-unquote wisdom of a lot of commentary and commentators out there who, you know, amongst, you know, the quote-unquote movement, whose bread and butter has been earned by saying that the Jews love Trump, that Israel loves Trump, that he's giving Israel everything Israel wants with this peace deal. And all of these other things, instead of looking at this from beyond a simple one-dimensional perspective, but maybe, you know, just considering the possibility, maybe there is something deeper to this, something more complex and complicated that requires, you know, like stereoscopic 3D vision, or at least two-dimensional vision. And, of course, now all of these same people have figured out in the aftermath of this stolen election that, hey, I guess the Jews don't like Trump anymore. Well, sorry, folks. As I said, I think I said on the last program, that doesn't cut it, okay? All of the signs have been there for 5 years. The neocons have hated him. They have utilized every ounce of influence that they have had to try and bring him down, and it all boils down to, as I have said on this program many times, folks, several issues. Number one, his peace deal, because Israel simply cannot live in an environment such as that. They can't have peace. The entire existential foundation of the Jewish state, whether it is the individual or whether it is collective, meaning the Jewish state in the Middle East, is one that is absolutely based and rooted on conflict with the Gentiles. Okay, take that away from, and you know where I'm getting this from, folks? From Theodore Herzl himself, okay, the founding father of the modern Zionist movement, who wrote in his book, The Jewish State, he said, if you get rid of anti-Semitism and if you get rid of the conflict, the eternal conflict between Jew and Gentile, then Judaism would cease to exist. Cease to exist. So that's number one, is the peace deal. And then number two, as I have discussed on this program and on the website now, too numerous to, for, it's a number so high that God hasn't invented it yet. It's the parameters themselves of this peace deal, okay, which would effectively quarantine and corral and curtail and cage in this wild animal so that she would not be free to engage in her thousands of year old plans for taking over the entire Middle East. And as we talked about on last week's program, folks, the other aspect to all of this, which I am absolutely certain it represents a major piston in this anti-Trump machinery, it is Trump's plans for taking away Israel's nuclear weapons. Now, he hasn't said that, folks. What he has said is that he doesn't want unstable regimes to have nuclear weapons, and I think that that is a perfectly valid thing, you know, notion to entertain. You know, you wouldn't want, you know, personally, I would prefer no nuclear power. Not just nuclear weapons, but nuclear power. I think that this is one of these things that mankind should never have dabbled in, any more than they should dabble in genetic engineering or anything like that. I think that nuclear power is inherently dangerous because there's always the byproduct of it that can never be made safe, which is, of course, the spent fuel or whatever. So, you know, but Trump can't do this. He can't come out and say, look, we need to take away Israel's nuclear weapons because she's an unstable political entity that is driven by these insane religious ideological currents. He can't say that. What he does instead is he uses Iran as the example. I will never allow the Iranians to have a nuclear weapon. That's how he gets the discussion going, by painting them as, you know, driven by a backwards religious ideology and all the rest of that. And once the discussion is going, then you start adding to it. And, of course, the peace deal itself is intrinsically involved in that, because Israel's justification for having nuclear weapons for all of the time that she has is that she has to have this in order to protect herself from the Arabs, who outnumber her, you know, 100-1. So that is the essence of it. But instead, folks, now what I'm going to do, and I'm going to beg your indulgence and your forgiveness ahead of time for subjecting you to this, we have a very interesting little, I'm not going to call it a sound bite because it's almost 20 minutes long. What it is in looking for some research material this morning, I stumbled across this YouTube video that this insane Hebrew had put together in Israel. And this was done just about a year ago, folks, right as the virus was coming out. And he said that this virus was God's way of trying to correct the world because of Trump's peace deal. Now, I'm going to apologize ahead of time for the sound quality. This guy didn't care enough about the dogs, the incessant dogs barking in the background. Didn't care that much about it. But I want you to listen very carefully to what he has to say, because just like Douglas Rushkoff's statement at the beginning of the program and about the corrosive force being the underlying thing that basically guides all world affairs today, this individual, he fleshes out a much more particular picture as it revolves around, again, folks, I'm sorry, I'm just a little bit out of it, as it revolves around Trump's peace deal and what it is that he has planned.
Hello, Mikutiel, the voice of Judea. The coronavirus running rampant around the world, global economies crashing, unprecedented, millions in quarantine in Italy and in other countries in Europe, in China, in Iran, falling like flies, with no cure in sight. Or is there a cure? So far, there's no medical cure other than quarantine and isolation to slow the process down, but it's highly contagious despite all of that. But is there a spiritual? Is there a spiritual cure? Is there a spiritual ill which has brought this plague upon us? Well, according to our rabbis, according to the Bible, there is no major catastrophe that happens around the world without it being for the Jewish people and for a reason. There is something that we can learn from this, and we need to learn from this if we want to stop the plague. If we want to stop the epidemic, then we need to understand what it is that we need to correct. God is not a cruel God. He gives us an opportunity to do tshuva, to repent. And there is a method for us to understand what it is that we need to fix. It could be that we can look at the punishment as measure for measure, as something which is so blatant, or a blatant violation of Torah. Or maybe there's something in the timing that can give us a hint, that can give us a clue. And so if we want to speak about the timing of this coronavirus, at least when it hit the headlines in Israel, well, there's something that happened on that very day that the headlines hit the newspapers in Israel. And you can see here on the one side, Sipuach b'matana, the long-awaited Trump plan, the deal ha-me'ah, the deal of the century. And here you can see side by side with the coronavirus in China. Well, it spread far, far from China. Now it's in Iran and the Middle East, and I believe more than 100 countries are already experiencing the corona, which is highly contagious. And so, if we look at the timing, certainly it looks like there is a connection between the Trump deal and between corona. What could that connection be? And so, I want to show you something here. This is Jared Kushner trying to sell the Trump deal.
And the biggest element today that caused radicalization is the conflict with the Palestinians and the conflict with the mosque. And so if we can get some resolution on this issue, and what we've done today is a major step, right? Because we've given them an offer where for the first time, the whole entire Islamic world can say the mosque is safe. And any Muslim who wants to come to pray is welcome, right? We've also been in a place where we said, if the Palestinians want a state, and they want to thrive.
Well, there you have it. I mean, here, Jared Kushner, I mean, for 3 years, they have concealed this deal, you know? They have concealed any information hasn't been leaked out. They denied everything. I mean, now we see that everything that they denied, or so much of what they've been denying over these past 3 years, is a big lie. But we'll see that the actual deal itself is a lie, and the way that they're trying to sell it to the Jewish people and to Israel and to the right in Israel, it's all a fraud. As Trump would say, this is the fake deal of the century. This is the fake peace deal. But the fact is, this is how Jared Kushner is trying to sell this deal to the Muslims. He says, and it's true, this is unprecedented. There has been no deal, not Oslo, not Camp David, there has been no deal offered on the table that offers the so-called Palestinians the Temple Mount, that offers them to bring unlimited worship on the Temple Mount. I mean, try and picture this. A billion Muslims coming across the light rail in Jerusalem on their way to the Temple Mount, on their way to the Judaism's holiest site, a billion of them. This should not be called the deal of the century, or in Hebrew what they would call deal Hame'ah, the deal of 100. This is a deal of a billion Muslims converging on Jerusalem, offering the Muslims essentially sovereignty on the Temple Mount, Judaism's holiest site, the heart of the Jewish people. But make no mistake, this is not the first plague that was caused because Jews were apathetic to Jewish sovereignty on the Temple Mount, to building the temple. It happened in the time of King David, as we learn in the book of Samuel, where 70,000 Jews died, were killed in a horrible plague. The corona of the time of King David, 70,000 people were killed, and the only way that they were able to stop it, the Medrash says it was caused because the Jews were not vigilant in exercising their right and their responsibility to build the temple, and it was only stopped. But when was it stopped? When King David started to deal with locating the place where to build the mount and to actually bring sacrifices onto the mount. And what is the connection, though? I mean, what could be the possible connection between the Temple Mount, Jewish sovereignty, and this plague? We'll get to the rationale afterwards. I just wanted to bring that connection. And in the actual word, the Hebrew word, you understand something. Hebrew is the divine language of God. It is not some makeshift language made by man. This is the language of the Kadosh Baruch Hu, of God himself. And in the language, we see that there is meaning to everything. Corona. What is corona? It means keter in Hebrew. Corona means crown. It means the crown of God. What is the crown of God, if not the holiest place where God's temple was and where God's existence and spirit is in the world? That is what the Temple Mount is. That is the most important, that is the heart of the Jewish people, and it is the throne of God. If you will, that is God's keter, that is his crown. The Rambam says, you know, if somebody says that, you know, these natural atrocities or plagues are just coincidence, mikre, the word in Hebrew is mikre, then this is what you say to them. Aval im yomru, the Rambam says this in the Laws of Tanit, of fasting, in the first chapter, im yomru, davarze miminhag olam, iralanu, vitzarazo nikret, if they say that this is just keri, this is just corona, if you will, it's the same root. If they say that this is just a coincidence, you have to say to them, then really what you're saying is that God is cruel, and that he does not give us a way and a method to prevent tragedy and to repent and to save ourselves from the from this horrible plague or any other punishment. And that's what it says in Leviticus in Vayikra chapter 26, Va'alachtem imi bekeri. If you say that this is keri, the same root as corona, Va'alachtem imachem b'chamat keri. If you say that this is the coincidence, then I'll bring more coincidence on you, more tragedy, until you understand the hand of God in every major happening in the world, certainly in these horrible, unprecedented, historic tragedies like the coronavirus. God is essentially saying, you have surrendered my crown, I'll bring you more crown, I will bring you more corona. Vitartem ala keter shali, eten lechem keter, I'll give you keter, corona. And so if you want to know the cure, the spiritual cure to corona, it's about the Jews getting together and rebuilding the temple and speaking out on the temple and taking action to actually begin the process of reinstating Jewish sovereignty on the Mount, not Jordanian custodianship that Jared Kushner and Trump is talking about in the Trump deal, and not a billion Muslims on the Mount, but millions of Jews on the Mount and sacrifices on the Mount and the rebuilding of the Temple of the Mount. Just like in the time of King David, that is the only way to stop this horrible, horrible epidemic. You know, it's interesting because not only were the headlines of the Trump deal and Corona on the same day. The headlines hit Israel, but actually the gematria, if you want to know, of deal Trump and Corona is actually the same. The numeric number of 373. But if you want to talk about the Trump deal, is, you know, it's a lot like Megillat Esther. It's a lot. It's very the Book of Esther, which we're reading also in this period on Purim. It's Shushan Purim here in Israel. It's very, very hidden. It's very, very fake. It's not what it appears to be. You know, the Trump deal talks about how the Jews are going to be given an opportunity to annex the territories. Well, in reality, yeah, 30%, but 70% goes to so-called Palestine. It's actually a surrender of Jewish sovereignty. And it even talks about giving the Arabs areas within Israel and what they call the triangle areas right next to the Highway 6 areas like Umm al-Fahm. According to this deal, these parts of what some people would call Israel proper also would fall under Palestinian. And it gives them a contiguous area between Gaza and Hebron and Shechem. This is unprecedented. And so, Jared Kushner and Trump and Bibi are trying to sell the deal to the right-wing community in Israel and Likud to their constituents, and they're saying no Jew will be expelled from their home. Oh, that's great! So they'll leave 15 isolated settlements. They will leave 15 so-called settlements in a stranglehold, surrounded by hundreds of thousands of so-called Palestinians. This deal also claims that there's no law of return for the Arabs. We don't have to worry about that. But that's not true, because if the deal says Shachor Lavan, black on white, it says that any Palestinian, so-called Palestinian, can return to these contiguous areas within the state of Palestine, which would be created by this deal. It also says that they try and sell it to us and tell us that it's the undivided Jerusalem, but that's not true, because we see that the deal would give the Arabs control and sovereignty over most of East Jerusalem. So it's one big fake deal. You know, it's really, really, really similar to this disease, because this disease is also hidden and it's not what it appears to be. I mean, we know that people can have it for 2 weeks before they even realize that there could be zero symptoms. Meanwhile, they're spreading this disease and it's so highly contagious and more people are getting it. They don't realize that they have it, and it's a whole chain effect, and that's why it's so complicated to get a handle on this, even with all of the isolation and quarantine of so many millions of people. It's not effective, because people don't even realize they have it. They don't see the symptoms. It's hidden. It's not what it appears to be, just like this fake deal. And you can touch a surface, and it can remain on the surface for 5 and 10 days. Even though you think it's not there, it's there. These are the qualities of this corona, which is so similar to the Trump deal, which is also fake, and it's not what it appears to be, and not the way they're trying to sell it. And we understand that the disease, very likely, this coronavirus, very likely originated with bats. A bat is also, it's fake. It has wings, but it's not really a bird. It may look like a bird, but it's not a bird. It's really a rat. It's a mammal. This is also symbolic in the whole concept of the Corona deal and the Temple Mount. And what is the cure that they speak of, though? I mean, the medical cure? Well, there is no cure per se, but they say that we can stop it or slow it down by isolation and by quarantine. And I think that's really, really the vital lesson that we need to learn. Because what's the real reason that in Israel they refuse to deal with the Temple Mount? That they refuse to deal with all kinds of issues, like expulsion of the Arabs and other issues, which may be real matters of survival. What's the real reason? Because they're frightened of being isolated. They're frightened of isolation. They are frightened of sanctions. They're frightened of what the Gentiles say. They're frightened of the international community. They're frightened to upset Trump. They're frightened to upset the United Nations. And we see here that the only solution is isolation. That's what we see here in quarantine. And for the first time, Israel has really closed its borders. And it's risked relations with some countries, closing its borders and closing flights and airlines and sending people back. And so we see that that's the real solution. The real solution is isolation, is having faith in God, not being frightened to stand alone. Understanding that when we stand alone and when we can no longer claim and believe that the victory and our salvation and our survival comes from America or any other superpower or ally, that's when the redemption comes. And we know that there's a direct connection between redemption and faith. And Munah brings Gula. And when Jews stand forward and they betray that faith, they show that faith in God. And how do you show faith? What is the barometer? What are you willing to do to prove that you really have faith in God and not in man, that you're not frightened of international opinion, but you're frightened of God's opinion to follow his Torah? And these are some of the lessons that we should learn from the corona. And these are clear lessons that we need to understand. And God willing, we will understand these lessons. I want to just show you another video here, because I think this is the core of the problem here in Israel. We see here that Bibi Netanyahu, here he says it outright. Listen closely to what he says, and I'll explain it in English.
והיה מעלה את חמתם של מיליארד מוסלמים עלינו, ואמרתי, יש גבול, יש דברים שאני לא מוכן לעשות כדי לנצח את הבחירות. אני אשמור על מדינת ישראל. אבל כנראה שה...
And here you hear it. Bibi Netanyahu goes as far as to say that he would have had a sure victory in these elections, or a much greater chance of winning, had he agreed to Ben-Gvir's condition that he opened prayer for Jews on the Temple Mount. I mean, think of how crazy it is. A Jew can't come to the holiest place in Israel and move his lips in prayer. And Bibi Netanyahu refused to the condition of Ben-Gvir, who said that he would pull out of the race and pull his support behind Bibi, giving Bibi a real chance of winning. If Bibi just agrees to that condition, not to permit Jews to pray on the Mount on Shabbat. And why didn't Bibi do it? He said, because that would have ignited the Middle East. Who knows? There would have been a world war. There would have been, all the Arabs would be up in arms. The whole world could be condemning Israel. This would be the end of Israel. Sanctions and isolation, who knows what. That's the whole point, Bibi. You missed the whole point. Not only did you lose the election, you're a loser. You didn't only lose the election, you don't even understand the beginning of what needs to be done to bring redemption and salvation and peace to Israel. Just like for the coronavirus, finally you're willing to understand the importance of isolation, even at the expense of your relations with the rest of the world. You have to understand that on a spiritual level. And if we don't have a right to the Temple Mount, to our holiest site, then what do we have a right to? And it's all about faith. And if you want to bring redemption and you want to solve this crisis and cure this plague, that's what you need to do. Isolation, faith in God, build the temple.
So there you go, folks. There was our deranged Hebraic commentator in Israel. And he is talking about the release of the coronavirus and talking about how this is a warning, a punishment from God, the God of Israel, that Trump better not go forward with this peace deal, because he is risking the wrath of God and everything else that can come from it. Now, folks, like I said, amazingly, and I would say distressingly and depressingly, the kind of conversations involving this, meaning drawing an equal sign between Trump's peace deal and all of the turmoil that all of us find ourselves in right now, to the best of my knowledge, and again, I will qualify that by saying I don't follow what appears in the alternative media because it's just too kooky, But to the best of my knowledge, nobody is touching on this. Nobody is drawing this equal sign or even asking the question, you know, could it be, what if this whole coronavirus thing was introduced as a result of Trump and his peace deal? Because certainly, they certainly coincide with each other in terms of timing. It was just literally within days of Netanyahu appearing at the White House at Trump's insistence, where Trump begins unveiling his plans, his big push for bringing peace to the Middle East. And then just literally a few days later, all of a sudden now, the continued existence of human civilization has just been turned into a giant question mark because of this virus that has just appeared out of nowhere. Now, our deranged Hebraic commentator here, there are a few things I jotted down that I want to expand upon. Number one, you know, he does say that that the cause of corona, it's a spiritual ill. That it is there because the God of the Hebrews has put it there. And then he says that the rabbis have said, you know, throughout time immemorial, that nothing happens in the world except for the benefit of the Jewish people. Now, this is very important, folks. You know, a couple of weeks ago, I mentioned that I was late doing the program because I had to work on some of my kids' cars. So one of those fix-it missions that I was on featured me at one of my kids' places, and as I was working on the car, he happens to live in an apartment, and his next-door neighbor came out and came up to me, and he said, "Hey, it's really good to see you again." This guy's about, oh, I don't know, probably close to 70, something like that. He says, "It's really good to see you again. I haven't seen you since I was a kid." Okay, he's at least 20 something years older than me, folks, and I've never seen this guy before in my life. And he says, "You look the same." And so I thought, okay. So anyway, he carried on, and he said, Prince Charles and Lady Diana, they were here the other night at this other apartment. And then it hit me, okay, this guy is crazy, all right? He's nuts, poor guy. And as I was working on the car, he sat out there on his porch, and he just carried on conversations with himself as if there were more than one person there. And I told my kid, you know, who lives next to him, I said, "Do you ever let him in your house, in your apartment?" And he said, "Sometimes, why?" And I said, "Don't." And he said, "Why?" I said, "Because he's schizophrenic." He said, "Well, what's that?" And I said, "Well, a person who is schizophrenic is psychotic. This is not just a personality disorder or something like that, or they're, you know, in a bad mood." I said, "There is no difference between their dream state and their state when they're awake. They hallucinate, they see things that aren't there, they hear things that aren't there, okay? And they react to those things." I said, "You know, this guy, he says that he saw Prince Charles and Lady Diana right there, you know, in the same building with you guys." And I said, "Now, the problem with people like this who are schizophrenic is that they hallucinate, and they may be hallucinating that they are being chased by a giant spider. Okay, and see, to them, it's real. They really believe that this is a giant spider that's chasing them and it means to eat them. And so what do they do is that they get out a steak knife or a butcher knife or a hammer or a shovel or something like that to defend themselves. But there is no spider in the room. There's only you, okay? And I said, "That's why you have to be very careful around people who are schizophrenic, because they will hallucinate and you can find yourself being violently attacked by them because they think that you're, you know, like I said, some big dangerous creature." Well, folks, this is what we find ourselves in these days. We find ourselves, our world, being run by people who are quite simply just schizophrenic. They are psychotic. They have been driven that way as a result of thousands of years of this very, you know, what we discussed on the last program, this very dark religion, this ideology. And they hear things. They hear things in their head which they believe to be real, whether it's Abraham hearing voices in his head telling him that, you know, those who bless you will be blessed and those who curse you will be cursed, or whether it's Moses, you know, hearing a voice coming out of a burning bush. Okay. Well, our deranged Hebraic commentator here in this this little 18-minute dissertation that he gives, where he says, you know, that the rabbis have taught that nothing happens in the world that isn't done specifically for the benefit of the Jewish people. Okay. Now, it's true, folks. This guy here, I mean, he's, you know, he's this scraggly bearded, lisping, you know, nobody out, probably in some shack out in one of the territories there. But what he is just a less refined and less sophisticated version of the rest of the group, the rest of the gang, the rest of the family, okay? People with political power, people with power over the media, people with incredible financial resources, they're all driven by the same madness. It's just that some of them do a better job of hiding it and hiding themselves and their mental illness from the rest of the world. You know, and this goes back to what we are dealing with now with this coronavirus. You know, you have people, maybe they don't have these full-blown symptoms of this thing, but they're carriers of it, okay? Just like it is with any disease, okay? And it's like that in our world. We have people who, they don't exhibit the outward pathology of being raised in that toxic Judaic environment. Okay, you know, maybe they're not these snarling, bloodthirsty types, but they carry that Judaism. They're carriers of that virus, and they will infect their environment with it to some degree. Okay, I mean, obviously, you know, you've got people like Sarah Silverman. Okay, this comedian, quote unquote. And the absolutely vile things that she says, okay? There is a person who, you know, is full-blown with their virology, with their infection, okay? And you can see it from a mile away. And then you have people who are, you know, that their infection is not as obvious, but they're carriers of it. Okay, carriers of that corrosive force. Anyway, this insane Hebrew engaged in this little dissertation here says nothing happens except for the benefit of the Jewish people. And then he talks about, you know, that corona, you know, that there are times when the God of Israel, you know, will intercede, and it, you know, and he mentions specifically, you know, violation of the Torah, when people violate the 613 rules, which I refer to now as the 613 lashes of Moses. Those are the 613 rules making up the law of Moses, which includes, you know, you're not allowed to pick up sticks on the Sabbath to make a fire in your home to keep it warm or to cook your food or anything like that. And anybody who does engage in that is to be stoned to death. Okay. So he talks about that, and then he gets into Trump's peace deal. And he brought something up that I had not considered before, but which obviously in the more particular scheme of things is very important. And he does say in this, he says that Trump's peace deal is unlike all of the others that have come before, whether it's Camp David, whether it's Oslo, and as you know, the listeners of this program know, we have spent quite a bit of time writing about and talking about the previous attempts on the part of previous presidential administrations to come to some sort of resolution to this ticking time bomb in the Middle East involving the Jews and the Arabs. He talks about, interestingly enough, folks, is the Temple Mount. Now, those of you who are unaware of what that is where the last remnant of the walls that surrounded Jerusalem, that there's one section of it that was left that the Romans didn't destroy. Everything else was completely brought down, not one stone being left upon the other, just as Jesus predicted would be the case. And so this wall there on the Temple Mount, this is the last remnant, and the Romans left it there. And they left it there as a testimony. And after the Romans had got done putting down this rebellion on the part of the Jews, I believe it was Hadrian, the Emperor Hadrian. I could be wrong. I have to make sure I have that answer correct by the next time we get together. By the time it was all done in, I think, 135 A.D., Hadrian decreed, first of all, that Jerusalem would be renamed. It would be renamed to Aelia Capitolina, and that Jews were not allowed to return to Jerusalem for any reason under penalty of death except on one day of the year. They were allowed to return to go and visit the wall that was left, and that day, folks, was Tisha B'Av. They were allowed to return on Tisha B'Av every year. And Tisha B'Av, folks, is the ninth day of the 11th month of the Hebrew calendar. What a coincidence. Can you believe that? Anyway, this insane Hebrew giving this dissertation here, he talks about how, according to Trump's peace deal, the Muslims are going to be allowed to come to Jerusalem to pray at the mosque. I guess it's the Al-Aqsa. I know there are two of them right there. I should have that information, and I will next time we get together, folks. But it is one of the three holiest places in Islam, because if I remember it correctly, it was at this particular site that the Muslims believe that Muhammad was transported there spiritually one night by the angel Gabriel, and that this is the place where the where it is said Muhammad was shown Jerusalem, they have built this mosque. Well, the Jews have every intention, folks, of blowing that mosque to pieces and replacing it with their rebuilt temple. Remember, the first temple was destroyed by the Babylonians, right? On Tisha B'Av, and was rebuilt by the Persians. And then the second temple was destroyed by the Romans. Well, they are in the preparatory phase now, folks, of rebuilding the third temple, okay? And Trump's peace deal, of course, negates that entire thing. Something which I had not considered, or else had not given it the kind of consideration that it deserves. But you understand that, or you must understand, we must understand that for the Jews, it's not just having that land back, it's having their temple. Because as our insane Hebrew here says, the temple is the throne of God. It is the physical embodiment of their God on earth, and it is considered the center of the universe. So, again, folks, we have to learn to think like they think. Now, this is a very difficult thing for us to do, because as we discussed on last week's program, Gentiles operate with a completely different type of spiritual and intellectual energy. And I used in last week's program the example or the comparison of a radio, you know, that has got these very fixed bandwidth. On FM, it goes down to like 87, and then it goes all the way up to 107, something like that. But there are other frequencies out there. It's just that the average civilian radio is only set to pick up those frequencies. And in that in that vein, you know, Gentiles, as proven by history, folks, because, you know, we have all of these great Gentile civilizations. We've got Egypt, we've got Persia, we've got Greece, we've got Rome. You know, Gentiles have created these great civilizations, whereas the Jews, instead of turning their thoughts upwards, you know, towards the upper bandwidth of the radio, they hear things that we simply are not able to hear, folks. The voices that they hear, the vibrations, the spiritual vibrations that are way, way, way down there. Gentiles are not, I would say they're not spiritually and probably not physically capable of picking up on those things. Okay. But the Jews, by virtue of being steeped in this very, very dark spiritual energy known as Judaism, and no, folks, I'm not talking about the Talmud and I'm not talking about the Khazars or anything like that. That entire line of argumentation and commentary and analysis that is a very popular thing within, you know, the certain corners of the quote-unquote truth movement is a total red herring. It's a total distraction. It is something that, you know, the Jews love it when Gentiles get together and they start talking about the Talmud and they start talking about the Khazars and we're all running around in circles when the answer, the very simple answer, has been there as an open secret for thousands of years. And it's known as the Torah or the Old Testament. Anyway, you know, we have to think, we have to, as uncomfortable as it is, folks, we have to learn to think like they do if we're going to understand the world that they have constructed around us as this corrosive force. And our insane Hebraic commentator is absolutely correct here with Trump's plans of preventing the destruction of the Al-Aqsa Mosque. And again, please, anybody out there who can set me straight on this, I would appreciate it. The planned destruction of the Al-Aqsa Mosque, along with all of the Christian churches and shrines within the Middle East as well, folks. This is what there's. I'm sure there are some people, probably of the, you know, the overly religious Christian variety, or even these idiot white nationalists out there, who would welcome the destruction of the Al-Aqsa Mosque or whichever mosque it is that, you know, that stands in the way of them building their Temple Mount. But they plan to get rid of all Christian churches and shrines as well, folks, because if you study Judaism and you study what the various great minds, rabbis, and I say great minds, of course, in quotation marks, because they're not. They're just completely deranged and driven by, you know, the dark energies of this, what really I consider to be the devil's religion. You know, they have only the only negative thing that they have said about Muhammad, the prophet of Islam, is that he was a madman. Whereas Jesus Christ, on the other hand, folks, Jesus Christ, there is nobody higher on the list in terms of their absolute hatred and plans for revenge than good old JC. And of course, I say that with complete reverence, folks, complete reverence, because I am a Christian, an imperfect Christian, but nevertheless, I view Jesus as he is all the way at the very top of the radio dial in terms of whose voice should be listened to. Anyway, he says something else, our deranged Hebrew. He says that Hebrew, the language Hebrew, is the language of God. That it's not a man-made language. It is the language of God himself. Now, this is also very important, folks, to understand. Because when you are dealing with people who are so obsessed, and I would say possessed, with their own importance, with their own divine quality, okay, you're dealing with people here who, well, like we discussed earlier, they have been driven mad. They hallucinate. They imagine themselves supermen and superwomen, and God's and infallible and, you know, gifted with powers that just are not possible with people outside of their fold. And this is part of the delusion that is running our world, folks. You know, even out here in the wilds of North Idaho, where yours truly happens to live, you know, my entire world may be to a lesser extent than it is for many people in other more, places with bigger populations. Nevertheless, my world, the sun of my world, rises and sets based upon a life that has been, that is governed by these people, this corrosive force, who own and control my money, who own and control my politics, that drives the well-being of my family. Okay. Now, this is the mindset. We're going to have to cut it short here, folks, because we're running out of time. I don't want to keep you too long. But this is, you know, like I said, I don't know if this is what is being discussed within the alternative media. I know for sure that within the mainstream currents, you know, the mainstream media owned by these people, by this corrosive force, drawing a line between Trump's peace deal, his plans for the Middle East, and the coronavirus and everything that is coming from it, has not been discussed at all, except in cryptic little things that have been said. You know, that there was a story that appeared, I believe it was on Jerusalem Post earlier this week, where it said that the recent upheaval in the Israeli Knesset, with the elections that are coming up, the instability there, that it has basically brought Trump's peace plans to a screeching halt. Well, we discussed this on the program as far back, I think, as 2 years ago, where as soon as Trump really, he was clear in his intentions for bringing forth this peace deal, all of a sudden, there's all this political instability in Israel with Benjamin Netanyahu unable to form a functioning government, and they have to keep having elections. And I said at the time, and I repeat it again, that this is all being deliberately concocted and contrived, because without a functioning government, you cannot engage in any negotiations and no treaties or contracts can be signed. But other than that, folks, as far as I know, and I wish I were wrong, and I certainly hope that I am, as far as I know, the only place on the entire freaking planet where they are discussing, where it is being discussed, the correlation, the direct correlation between what Donald Trump intends to do in the Middle East and what is happening right now with coronavirus and with all of the political instability and all of the rest of that, the only place where it is being discussed is here. I find that not just depressing, folks, but distressing. And on that note, I just want to make a few more comments about things that I think we all need to keep in mind. First of all, this new wave that we're dealing with, the way I understand it, because, again, I'm still on the mailing list of a few individuals, and they're always sending me articles written by all sorts of truth movement writers saying, oh, it's all just a hoax, nobody's getting sick, and blah, blah, blah. Well, that may have been the case a year ago, folks, when the virus first came out. But as I said, I think that the little kitty cat is growing, and it is getting stronger and getting more dangerous, approaching lionhood. And I think that this variant that we are seeing now, I think that this is the next stage in this. I bring this up because if Donald Trump does not concede and does not give the election over to Joe Biden, which I don't think Trump is going to do, I think that on January the 20th, Trump is still going to be sitting at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Now, whether this has been adjudicated in the courts or whether he is there because the situation in America politically and domestically and everything else has just fallen apart so badly that he has to stay there. He has to remain there as commander-in-chief in order to marshal military and police resources and things like that. I think he's still going to be there. And I think that, I can't remember if I mentioned it on last program or not. I'm just going to go ahead and say it now. I think that this is the reason for the vaccine, folks. I think the reason why this vaccine was rushed through in terms of research and development and production and all of the rest of that, I think it's because Trump and his people know that there are worse viruses coming that and that are being used to run him out of office. And so those of you who know me personally know that I am very, very much against vaccines. I have 10 children, and they haven't been vaccinated. So I'm not saying this as a pro-vaxxer, folks, okay? But what I'm saying is that we may face a situation in the very near future where we're going to have to take that vaccine if we want to stay alive. Because these viruses that they have planned to let loose really are indeed the real deal. I ran a story earlier this week. As I said, I don't think I finished my thought on it because I am a little bit disjointed today, folks. I ran a story earlier this week dealing with what was the Israeli germ warfare bioweapons research facility that they have there, how they would test out germs that were DNA specific, that were targeted towards certain genetic types, and that how they had been designed to kill all sorts of other people, all sorts of other races, but to not harm the Jews. The section, or the what I used in this article, was a section of Viktor Strofsky. He's the former Mossad agent. His book, The Other Side of Deception, where he talks about how that this particular biowarfare laboratory in Israel and how it was used for exactly the kinds of things that we're seeing right now. And on that note as well, folks, you know, this business that we are dealing with right now with the passage of this stimulus bill and the fact that Trump is saying, you know, $600 is not enough. Well, okay, people may say, oh, this is just like his pushing the vaccine. This is all political in nature. This is him, you know, trying to score political points with people. But what if it isn't that, folks? What if him pushing the vaccine really is the real deal? What if he knows, what if there really are some nasty viruses coming out that could kill half of the population? And that the only way to avoid that is to take that vaccine. And this $2,000 that he's talking about, you know, when you're talking about, you know, in America, you know, the average family, I think, is three kids. That's $10,000 being put into the pockets of the average American family. Why so much? Does Trump know that these viruses that are coming, that they are going to be so bad that it really is going to completely collapse the economy? And by that, I mean 90% unemployment. These are things that we have to think about, folks. Unfortunately, things that you're not going to hear about, that I know of, anywhere but here. We really are facing, we're facing the worst days of our lives, folks, ahead of us. We've got nothing ahead of us but trouble, serious trouble. And again, you know, going back to the question, what if 1,000, 2,000 years ago, what if the people who were mixing up all of the ingredients that were going to go into at least Western civilization, what if they had said, let's leave this particular spice known as Judaism out of the bread. See, because once it's baked in, folks, as anybody who has made any bread or a cake or anything like that, once it's in, once it's been mixed in, it's impossible to get it out. What if Judaism, what if sane people 2,000 years ago had looked at this and said, hey, these people are nuts. What is this business? They're hearing voices in their head telling them to do this and telling them to do that. And, you know, as especially as manifested in the revolt against the most powerful empire in the world. What kind of crazy gets into a person's brain that makes them think that they can go up against something like that and stand a snowball's chance in hell of winning? Well, the kind of people who believe in stories such as David and Goliath and all sorts of other fairy tales that by their very nature, by their very corrosive nature, seek to break down regular human rational thought and to replace it with all sorts of schizophrenia and other forms of mental illness, the corrosive force. Anyway, folks, that's it for today. I honestly need to lay down and take it easy. Things are starting to spin in my world right now, I'm just going to take it easy. I'm sorry I went a little bit long today, but I suspect I'm not going to hear too many complaints about it in that regard. Those of you who appreciate what we do here, who would like to contribute with the costs, contribute to the costs associated with putting together this program, can do so by emailing me at the Ugly Truth Radio Program. That's all one word, the Ugly Truth Radio Program, at gmail.com, and I will respond to you with what you need so that you can help us out here. Folks, hopefully this week will be a better week. You know, there are, I had this conversation with some of my kids, because they're, especially the older ones, they're becoming very concerned with things. I think they are picking up on some of the rumblings under the ground that indicate that we're headed for some very serious changes ahead. And, you know, they're understandably upset because young people, they're full of hope. They're looking forward to the future. They are looking forward to their own lives. And so now what they see is a world that literally is coming apart in pieces right in front of them. And I reminded them, I said, yes, that is true. Everything that you see on the outside is true. Just as it was true when the apostles were in the boat with Jesus, that they had found themselves in the middle of a storm that looked like it was going to sink the boat. And naturally, their response to that, their reaction to that, was to be terrified. And in the midst of all of this, Jesus is asleep, or at least he is appearing to be asleep. And they wake him and they say, "Lord, Lord, save us, lest we perish." And he said, and with one word, peace, the storm was calmed. And that can happen, folks. It can happen. Miracles do happen. And we have to keep that in mind in the days and weeks that go that are headed our way, in that we are going to find ourselves in this rickety boat with the waves getting higher and crashing into the side of the boat, and the appearance that there is no higher power there to save us from what appears to be a deluge. But it can happen, folks. It can happen, and that's what we have to hang our hopes on, in addition to doing what we need to do, the first of which is to absolutely, completely wash ourselves, baptize ourselves in the cleansing water of Gentile sanity, and to expunge every single micromillimeter of this corrosive force that, unfortunately, as I've said on many occasions, folks, it's everywhere. It's in the air, it's in the water, it's in our toothpaste. But the first step towards washing ourselves of this is to recognize first and foremost that indeed it is poison. It is poison to our systems, and it is our enemy. Anyway, that's it for today, folks. All of you have a good week, and all of you of goodwill have a good week. And in the meantime, stay safe and stay sharp, and we will see each other soon, God willing.